I was on DJ Khaled's first album, Listen. I've done a good bit. Yeah, I've done a lot, but I did it pre-internet.
Why does that make a difference?
So before the internet, you had to either be on a lead single for people to know who you were, or you had to be on so much as a guest or a featured artist to where it just made sense for people to know who you were because you were on songs with other major artists that either had second singles or you were performing with them. But fortunately for me, I was featured on a lot of things, but not major release first singles. Where today, if you know, having the internet, you can exploit yourself to the world really easily, especially if you have music that's trending.
Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is hip-hop artist, producer, and designer James Homeboy Maddox, whose work has been featured on 10 major label albums, 2 major motion pictures, and 3 commercially released video games. Homeboy is also the head of product design for his company Metro Southern Media, which specializes in creative services for artists, corporate branding, and film production services. During the interview, we discussed how signing a record deal was the beginning of the end for his first band, the unique way he got established in the Atlanta music scene, his production process, and why he likes to work with real musicians, how he became a multimedia service provider, and much more. I spoke with Homeboy from his office in Atlanta. It's a pleasure to meet you, by the way. I'm
likewise, glad that we could do this.
All right. So in reading about you, I saw that your band, Red Clay Warriors, you mentioned somewhere that when you signed your record deal, it was the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how?
Yeah. So, I mean, we come from a small town. I'm a little bit older than what I look, but,
you don't look old.
Yeah, no. It was before the 2000s. So it's like in the mid 90s. We finally got our first record deal. It was an independent record deal, and me being a producer, I knew about how to, you know, register records with ASCAP or BMI. I knew about copywriting, my recordings, both with the SR and the PA form, but I knew nothing about music breakdowns, publishing. I knew nothing about how writing was supposed to be broken down. So because I was the producer and I wrote 90% of all of our hooks, and I performed on probably about 85% of all of the songs that were created, the guy that was signing us was saying, hey, who wrote the songs? And I was like, well, I wrote the hook. Who wrote the beat? Well, I made the beat. I made all the music. Okay, well, you're going to get a bigger percentage than everyone else. And when the rest of the band members heard that I was going to get more than them, they were like, why? We're all the Red Clay Warriors. Like, why should this one person out of all of us get more when we're all one group? And so he explained it to us and said, hey, yeah, you guys are all one collective group. However, the way that this stuff is broken out is based on who contributed more to a particular piece of music. And I was like, oh, wow. I didn't know that. So it was a big thing, man, like so much so to where I tried to tell my band members, well, okay, what if I just be a rapper and not do any production and we just pay someone else for production? Then, you know, we're all making equal, you know, shares for whoever writes on whatever song. And they were like, no, why would we do that? Because you make all of our music, so why would we go pay someone to make music? And I was like, well, either we pay someone up front to make music, or we're going to pay me more of a percentage because I'm making the music. But that didn't go over well. And so it was pretty much the beginning of the end. And that was my introduction in understanding how the music industry or the business side of the music industry actually worked.
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it? Especially when you're young in the business and don't quite get the way it works. That could be hard, a hard pill to swallow.
Absolutely.
Okay, so then you became a solo artist, right?
Yes. I never wanted to be a solo artist. I always liked being in a group of people, feeding off the energy of others. Even though I was multi-talented, I never wanted to be a solo artist. But a lot of the engineers at the time that we were used, you know, when we went to certain studios, a lot of the engineers would tape with me and they were like, hey, we think you'll be great as a solo artist. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do it. And then our manager at the time was like, hey, everyone keeps saying that you should just be a solo artist. Why don't you just give it a try? Why don't you just make a couple of solo songs and let's see where this thing goes. And so, you know, I did a few things and I had to rebrand myself. I had to leave my hometown. I basically started hosting open mics at a club about two counties up from where I lived. Didn't know anyone. So because I was the host, I didn't want to rap. I didn't want to do any production for anyone. I just wanted to host just to kind of get that synergy from the people that were, you know, regulars there, just to get to know me as a person, you know, this fun guy that could you know, host a event. And that worked out really, really well. The thing that I learned with that was the people always feel like the person that's hosting the event is the person that's making the decisions. So it gave me a certain amount of leverage amongst other artists, you know, in the Atlanta area. And so one night we packed it out. We had a packed house and we did like a freestyle battle. And I have a pretty witty sense of humor. And so I told the guys, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to freestyle tonight. I'm going to get on the mic and freestyle. And oh, homeboy, you don't rap, man. You just host the events. You don't rap. And so, yeah, I'm going to rap tonight. And so the DJ knew that I had a song where I sampled Nels Carter's TV show, Give Me a Break. And he loved that song. He was like, will you do the song? I was like, yeah, I'll do it tonight. And he was like, please, will you do the song? I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. So they got ready for me and I didn't freestyle, but I said, hey, DJ Goldfinger, drop the track, man. And so he dropped the track. I ended up rapping and the room was just like, and so once I finished, I had a lot of guys come up to me and say, hey, man, we didn't know you could rap. Why haven't you been rapping? I was like, well, it was more for you guys. It wasn't for me. And they were like, so who made that track? That track is jamming. I was like, I produced the track. So you mean to tell me all of this time for this whole year that you've been hosting this open mic show, you never let anyone know that you were producing. You never let anyone that you could actually rap. Why? And I was like, because it was about you guys. And so that track that I performed that night was the track that actually got me my first major record deal with Collie Park Records and Warner Music Group. And so after that, because I had already built that camaraderie with all the rest of the artists, you know, in that area of Atlanta, I was almost like a people's champ. So when I did my signing release party, we all did it at the same club that I did my open mic party. So it just worked out for me.
Very cool. You were producing other artists too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I've produced songs for Yin Yang Twins. I've produced songs for B.O.B., couple local artists, a guy named Playboy Trey, an artist that was signed to Little John at the time called Bo Hagen, of course, for myself. I was on DJ Khaled's first album, Listen. I've done a good bit. I've done a lot, but I did it pre-internet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so why does that make a difference?
So before the internet, you had to either be on a lead single for people to know who you were, or you had to be on so much as a guest or a featured artist to where it just made sense for people to know who you were because you were on songs with other major artists that either had second singles or you were performing with them. But fortunately for me, I was featured on a lot of things, but not major release first singles. Where today, if, you know, having the internet, you can exploit yourself to the world really easily, especially if you have music that's trending. So it was that barrier, the reason why when people say homeboy, no one knows who I am. And I say, oh, I'm the guy that did the Stand Up and Get Crunk song with the Ying Yang Twins. They're like, oh, okay. So the music that I've been on is actually bigger than the character that I am.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I mean, I still get money, but...
Yeah. Okay, that's the good part.
That's the good part.
Cool. All right. So some producers are kind of reluctant doing it. They're doing it because people ask them or friends ask them. And there are others that are really enthusiastic that go and they look for work. And they like doing it. So what category do you fall into?
It depends. I'm very selective at this point. From a music perspective, dealing with artists, I'm a little bit more reluctant to do the production because you really can't make the money. Most artists can't afford to pay a producer that has, you know, qualifications like what I have for myself. They can't really afford to pay the rate. And even if I do a back end split, most artists today don't have budgets and they won't put forth the effort to push a record to where we can actually make money on the back end. So it really doesn't make much sense for me to do a lot of music for artists. However, as it comes for like scoring for movies or documentaries or doing voiceover work or, you know, doing things of that nature, like I will do a lot of that because there's more benefit to doing those type of things right now than it is for me to do things for, you know, quote unquote artists.
I didn't realize you're doing scoring and things like that.
Absolutely. I do scoring. I'm actually an engineer too. So I'm an artist, producer, and engineer. Engineering and producing were things that I landed myself into, but they were not things that I set out to actually be. What caused me to be a producer was we had one guy in the city. I'm from a city called Griffin, Georgia, which is about 40 minutes south of Atlanta. There is no direct road, no major highway run through the city that I'm from. We only had one high school when I grew up. So very, very small. We had one guy from Florida that moved to Griffin named Mike Penn. And he had his own recording studio and he could produce. So everyone in the city would go to him for production and to record with him. Problem was, when it was time to do like talent showcases, we all had the same beats.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
So I made friends with him and I watched him produce tracks. And I was like, man, I think I can do this. I know I can hear the music in my head that I really would like to produce for myself, but I can't get him to produce what I actually hear in my head. So I was dating this girl at the time that her uncle was in a gospel band and he had a chord. I can't remember the exact chord keyboard that he had. And I told him, I said, hey, Derek, I'm thinking about getting into production. I need to get a keyboard. Which keyboard should I get? He was like, well, I really like Roland. Like, I really think you should get a Roland. And I was like, which one? So he and I went to Guitar Center and I looked at the Roland XP50 at the time. And he was like, I like this thing, man. I think it's a pretty good beginner board. You can learn from it. It's got some solid sounds in it. You can expand it. Like, I think you should get this one. It's like, awesome. So couple of weeks later, I brought my dad up. I was still too young to get financing for myself. I was about, I think I was like 17 years old at the time. And my dad went in and he was like, okay, son, I'll finance it, but you got to pay it off. Like, you know, you work, so you pay it off, I'll get it. Done deal. Got it. And this taught me about financing. So I got this keyboard. And I'm at home and I'm playing around with the keys and I'm learning how to find the different sounds in it. And I was like, okay, I got this beat. I'm ready to record this beat. And so I was like, okay, how do I record? So, and I mean, in those days, to read a manual was almost like reading Japanese, and it didn't make any sense, and you couldn't really figure out. So I let Derek keep the keyboard, and I was like, hey, I'll let you keep it. You figure out how to sequence with it. You teach me, and then I'll be off. He kept my keyboard for about 6 months, and he never got back with me. So I ended up getting it back from him. And I'm sitting, and I was like, hey, Dad, I don't think I want this thing anymore. Can I just take it back and try to get something else? He's like, no, son, we're paying for this one. Like, we can't take it back. You own it now. Like, you got to learn how to use it. And so I spent countless hours learning how to sequence on a keyboard, and I learned how to make beats on my own, and I became this producer. And so the same guy that was mixing our records, he would get drunk and just mix our music while he was drunk, and things didn't sound right. And it was like, goodness, man. So I ended up going to a few other engineers, and I just ran out of money. I couldn't afford it. And so I have a pretty good set of ears, and I'm watching and I'm noticing the tools that they're using. I'm noticing when they're using compressors. I'm noticing when they're using certain EQs and what they're doing, and I'm asking questions. So why are you putting the EQ on the strings? Or why are you putting this EQ on the vocals? And why are you doing this? Why are you adding a compressor? Like, why do you need this? And so I'm really trying to understand. I'm understanding about chorus and reverb and all the different things that gives the pretty much the life to the vocals and music. And I have this one guy named Randy that actually was an engineer for Sony. And he taught me a lot about recording vocals. He wasn't really good at mixing hip hop tracks because he really didn't get the percussion quite right. But I learned a lot about melody and how to EQ pianos and strings and vocals from him. I was like, okay, I think I'm pretty good. And, you know, as an engineer, we all have that special thing that we all do ourselves. And we can learn from others different techniques, but we just have our own sound, right? So I tried to mimic what he was doing, and I came up with something that I liked myself. I was like, okay, I kind of like this. And I had this other guy named Keith Chapman that primarily only mixed hip hop, but he was horrible with vocals and he was horrible with the melody part, but he was excellent with percussion. So I just kind of watched what he was doing with percussion and how he would EQ the drums and how he would stack certain drums, and, you know, And that kind of helped shape and mold me into an engineer. I got my own, I got like a Tascam 8-track recorder with the board with the 8-track channels. And I learned to record myself. I started mixing myself. Everything went digital. I got Pro Tools, and I've been using Pro Tools since the first Digi 01. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That goes way back.
Yeah. I went from ADAT, well, first of all, I went from 2-inch reel to ADAT to Logic to Pro Tools, and I've been with Pro Tools.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of surprised, but in a good way, that you're a Pro Tools guy, because there's so many people in hip-hop especially are Logic-based.
Right.
And I always felt that Logic was a great platform for creating, but it wasn't the best for mixing. Pro Tools is better.
Yeah, for me, and I'll be honest, like, I do everything by ear. I've learned a lot of different techniques. I actually plan to go back to school just so I could really learn technically what I'm actually doing versus what I'm actually hearing what I'm doing, and so that I can speak more technical about, you know, what I'm doing to mix as well. I could give seminars and things of that nature, but to me, Logic is too technical for how I like to work. Like, you truly have to know a lot of technical things. Pro Tools, I can get in it. It's pretty clean. It's pretty easy. I can hit play, record, boom, it's there. If I want to create bus tracks, it's pretty easy to create those bus tracks and route things. So when you look at Logic, it's just the way that it's set up. To me, it's not very intuitive for the way that I like to work and the way that I mix things and create templates for, you know, the different types of tracks that I may mix. So I just like the way Pro Tools work.
There are 15 simple mix fixes that can instantly take your mixes from amateur to pro level. These are the secrets that the top engineers know that most musicians don't. That's what you'll find in my Mix Fix playbook. Head to go.bobbyosinski.com/mixfix to check it out now. Let's talk about you as a producer for a little bit. Every producer has their own little tricks, and especially with working with an artist. What's yours?
I am a producer that feels like your voice is actually an instrument that I'm missing. So when I create a track, it's pretty open to begin with. And then I'll send it to an artist and say, hey, do what you do on it, and then we'll come back to it. And then when they come back and I hear what they're doing, I'll either continue adding or I'll take away from things so that their vocals can complement the track and it all has a certain level of synergy. So that's kind of how I am as a producer. Now, I do sample, but I'm a little bit unique in the way that I sample. I'll sample a track only to replay what I sample.
Okay, what does that mean exactly?
So say I had a Al Green record that I really liked and I wanted to sample it. I'll sample it, but there are certain things that I would like to add in it myself that I probably couldn't add in it if I just used the sample alone. So I have as an artist, I have a 4-piece band that I actually perform with, and we'll go back and I'll resample it and I'll chop it up and I'll say, okay, guys, I want you to replay it with the live instruments. I'll resample what they did and then add what I'm doing into the original sample to where now I have two different samples that I'm actually sampling.
Oh, homeboy, you don't know how much I like hearing that.
Yeah.
No, just the, you know, the fact that you're working with live musicians, I think, is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something about live musicians that, as great as samples and loops and everything are, and AI and all that, it's not the same as real musicians.
It's not. See, I actually play alto and tenor sax.
Oh, okay. Well, you're a musician yourself.
So I'm a musician too. Yeah. So yeah. I dibble and dabble with the keys, but my partner, Kenny, who's my pianist and my organ player, I mean, he that's what he does. He's a trained classical piano, went to school for music theory. Like, that's what he does. And my guitar player, he's excellent. So I like to work with them, and I'll create a track. Like, I use Fruity Loops to actually make beats, but I'll go back to them and say, hey, this is the foundation of what I'm doing. I got the chords here. Kenny, can you spice this up? Like, really make it pretty, make it your own, but just follow my lead. And I'll do the same thing for the guitar, do the same thing for the bass. So I'm actually producing the full song, but I allow them, because that's the instrument that they play. I'm like, you're going to do what I know I can't do inside of this electronic equipment. So just make it human, humanize it, and make it your own, but just follow my lead. And that's how I end up with the sound that I actually get.
Yeah. You know, I live just over the hill from Hollywood. So I've been here for a long time, and I've worked in the best, biggest studios with the best studio musicians. And really, that's what, the way you have to work with them and say, well, here's the basic idea and go do your thing. And it's always better when they don't go, you know, go do their thing rather than you dictating it too strictly to them.
See, even when recording artists, I have a female artist that I record, and she's excellent, has a lot of vocal range. And she's used to working with producers that want to put auto-tune on her voice all the time. And I told her, I said, no, we won't use auto-tune with me. And she was like, but I think I need it. I said, you don't. I said, here's the thing. I want you to record your records as if you were singing live. I said, because if we're out live, we're not going to have auto-tune. So I want it to be as authentic as possible. If you crack and hit a bad note, yeah, we'll go back and we'll correct that bad note. But some level of imperfection is what makes music great. So everything is not supposed to be spot on, super accurate. Where's the human part of what we're doing? So when I record with her, she's like, I really love, enjoy, you know, recording with you because you allow me to do what I do without trying to force me to do what everyone else is doing. I'm like, no, like you need your own individuality as an artist and you need your own sound. That's what made the 70s great. They didn't have auto-tune and they could only take so many takes before the reel start to break and and you're warping the reel. So it's like, come on. Like, so we're going to learn before we come into the studio. We're going to really work out. We're going to do it right. If you hit bad notes, we're going to correct them, but we're going to keep the imperfections as well. So that's how I record.
Very cool. Very cool. No, I agree. The only time I'll use auto-tune or any kind of pitch correction is if there's something that's really bad.
Yep.
And you can't fix it any other way. Mm-hmm. So you can't get the vocalist or something like that. And that's only one or two notes.
Yep.
At the most per song. You know, it's not much.
Yeah.
So yeah. No,
but you know, that's the pleasure of having the artist actually record with you versus when someone sends you a track and you don't have that control to say, hey, go back and hit that note again. And to your point, you do have to go back then and then correct whatever bad notes that they hit, you know, with auto-tune. But yeah, I try not to use it at all.
One of the things, well, I'll tell you what's especially good. There are so many artists that are never get a chance to work with the producer, especially, you know, a good producer that's been around, has some experience. So they fall into the trap of, oh, that's good enough. And with the producer, you go, oh, wait, you can do that better. You know what I mean? So that's why I always felt that a producer is really important, even just from the standpoint that I'll make you do it better than you could probably do it on your own. Even though everybody thinks they can do it well on their own, you know?
So you even bring up a good point about the word producer. Most people think when you say producer, they're talking about the person that made the beat. No. That's not what a producer does. A producer can also make beats, but a producer is a director. Producer is actually helping to get the most out of that track, that person with the idea that's going to make it a hit. That's what the producer does, right? So a lot of people don't understand what a producer's job really is.
Let's take a left turn here for a second and talk about your other company, Metro Southern Media.
Yeah.
So how did that get started?
It got started because I wanted to offset my taxes.
All right. I love it.
Yeah, so around 2014, I was bringing in a pretty good amount of money for the music that I put out, and I was paying a lot in taxes. And so I have an uncle that's probably been a millionaire since 1992, and he kept asking me, why don't you start a business? And I was like, I don't really want a business. He said, but you want to pay taxes? I was like, no. He said, look, man. So, you know, he just kind of taught me about business 101. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. So I went out, got my LLC, started to understand the things that I could write off and how I could offset things for taxes. And so I primarily used it for that for years. But I'm a creative at heart. I have a degree in multimedia design and development, so I can do motion graphics and I can develop video games. So I'm a natural networker and I know a lot of people. My business partner went to school for photography and videography. And so I do voiceover work. I do a bit of radio imaging for some of the radio stations. And so I was like, you know what? I want to start a new type of business. And he's like, what are you thinking? I want to be a multimedia service provider. He's like, what's that? I'm like, well, we can do everything from graphic design to voiceover work for you. If you need a commercial shot, we can shoot that commercial. If you just need voiceover, if you need voice acting, we can do all of those things. And I actually have a cast. I have a few employees. We do everything from kids voiceover to urban voiceover, to corporate voiceovers, to corporate graphic design, to hip hop graphic design, to country graphic design. I shot a documentary last year that's on Tubi and Amazon Prime. So with that business, I'm able to do so much to where I was like, hey, I need to split this up and really, really make this a thing. And so now with Metro Southern Media, I have two parts of it. One that's, you know, catering towards businesses in the corporate world, and then that world for artists, because for what I do, whether you're an artist or business, you all can still use the same type of services that we provide. And so for me, it's just a matter of putting the galleries together for that particular business case. And so that's Metro Southern Media. So we do quite a bit, but it's a new style of business that, you know, I think from a service perspective, pretty much anyone can use this. We're doing social media management and everything.
Boy, it's everything an artist could use.
Absolutely.
And most artists, they don't want to do that. They want to be creative, and they really don't want to do especially that hard part of it.
Yep. So I mean, everything from coming up with your hashtags to coming up with the actual the scripts and the content, the concepts, we do all of it.
Very cool. So how long has that been going on in this concept that you're at?
So we really just kicked off hard probably about a good year now, as far as, you know, really going strong and just really going after clients. We have a pretty good bit of clients now that we're juggling, and we're really growing pretty fast.
Well, you're in Atlanta too, right?
Yes.
So that's pretty big corporately there. There's a big base of Fortune 500.
Yep.
Corporations there. So
yeah,
good for you. That's a good place to be. Yeah. All right, homeboy, last question. Mm-hmm. I think this is a good one for you too, since you've had so much experience and so many different things. What's the best piece of advice that maybe somebody imparted to you, or maybe you learned along the way?
The advice is understand business first. Yeah, understand business first. I get a lot of artists now ask me about, you know, they ask me a lot of questions that are easy questions to answer. And what I always tell them is, hey, take time to understand the business, because then you can actually ask me questions that are really productive for your career. Right now, you're asking me a lot of the basic questions that you can find on YouTube, you can find in books, you can find anywhere, you can find on Instagram, right? But understanding a business allows you to ask the questions that will actually help change your career. I mean, if you're going to start a restaurant and you just start it without understanding the restaurant business, you're probably going to fail pretty fast. But if you understand the business and you move in the network of people who are in the restaurant business, then you can ask a lot of the questions that'll probably give you a lot of advice that will keep you from making some of the mistakes that they made. But if you don't know enough about the business, you don't even know the questions to ask.
Yeah, that's a big problem, isn't it?
Yep.
You don't know what you don't know.
That's it. Yeah.
I think that's a good place to stop.
All right.
This is awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosensky.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news, and find out about openings for my latest online classes at bobbyosensky.com. This is Bobby Osensky. I'll see you next time.